Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk football. If you're new to the show, be sure to subscribe, follow, rate, and review the podcast, and follow on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at PGF Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing and McKenzieBrewing.com to check out their lineup of award-winning craft beers. Football season is back. Season 3 started in April with our NFL draft coverage, and then we interviewed a ton of great guests to preview as many NFL teams as we could this summer. But now the games are here, and we're breaking it down for you, PGF Nation. Today, we're going to talk about what happened in college football week 1, and then we're going to make our NFL predictions for who we think wins each division this year. And of course, we'll end the show with our pick 6 segment. We'll make our best 6 bets of the upcoming weekend. Again, I'm excited to have with me my co-host, radio and podcast legend, Tyrone Powell. What is up, Ty?
I'm doing all right. Back in the saddle with the brother here, getting ready to set this thing on fire with football back at the helm. They say football is king, so let's talk about the pigskin flying around the country today.
Man, I'm so excited too. I am so excited to talk about these games with you, Ty. And you're right about king. I think it was Charles Barkley that made this quote. He said, "College football is king, but NFL is King Kong." And that certainly is the case here in this country, as we know it, America, the greatest sport in the world. It kicked off last week, week 1 in college football. We saw some great games. I want to talk about some of these games with you, Ty. Before we get into our NFL predictions, we got to look back at this crazy weekend that was. Some of these games were shocking. We had some big upsets. We also had some close calls. One of the close calls was Oklahoma, the number 2 team in the country. A lot of people think they're going to be in the college football playoff this year once again. But man, it was too close for comfort if you're a Sooners fan, Ty. They only scored 3 points in the second half and 0 points in the fourth against a Tulane team that really made this too close for comfort. What did you make of that game, Ty?
Well, see, this is the incredible thing about, you know, week 1. Everybody has to work out their kinks. So these are situations where these teams take other teams lightly. And Oklahoma, knowing that they're going to get every team's best punch because they're one of the blue bloods, if you will, across the nation. So they had to settle in, make their adjustments, and make this a game and come back and steal it. But you can never test the heart of a champion. So I give Oklahoma credit to actually resolve the situation and the competitor that they had to deal with in Tulane.
Tulane came into this game clearly unafraid of the Oklahoma Sooners. They really kept this thing competitive all the way into the fourth. They had a chance on a 4th-and-long situation. They almost picked it up to extend the game in the final minutes. It was a nail-biter. Tulane had never scored more than 17 points versus an AP top 5 team ever until this game where they scored 35 on Oklahoma. Everyone's talking about how the Oklahoma defense is going to be better this year, and maybe they are. But they didn't look very sharp in week 1. I think if I'm an Oklahoma fan, that game has to have you a little nervous. But I'm going to agree with what you just said right there, Ty. This is one of those moments where you got to work out the kinks. No need to panic if you're Oklahoma or even if you're one of these other top-ranked teams that had a scare, because there's a lot of season left to go. And as we know, there's no preseason in college football. So game 1, these games count. Tulane came up fired up. A lot of credit to them making this a game. But yeah, that was a scary one for them. Another one that was really scary was Iowa State barely beat FCS Northern Iowa 16-10. This was a home game for Iowa State, no less, a team that's got some really big expectations coming into this season. They get the win, just like we said a minute ago with Oklahoma, so maybe no need to panic, but this was a little scarier too. This was an FCS opponent, and this was a close game, less than a touchdown.
The crazy thing about this situation is they're home, being Northern Iowa and Iowa State, knowing this is potentially an in-state rivalry, even though Iowa State clearly has the clear-cut edge because they're more recognized across the board. But I was stunned at the point total as well, especially while Iowa State is being ranked so high in comparison to Northern Iowa to try to make a name for themselves. So this is a great, you know, get your fist balled up trying to see who could come up with the last play and make something happen. And Northern Iowa is basically a possession away from scoring a score, and winning the game if they get a touchdown and the extra point. So I definitely, again, like I said, you can't test the heart of a champion and more or less the situation, not saying Northern Iowa is, but everybody's 0-0. The slate is clean. So trying to get a win and having something that big, similar to the way that I want to say close to a decade ago on what Appalachian State did to Michigan and went up into the Big House and stunned the Wolverines. And the Wolverines have never, to me, I don't feel like they've ever gotten back from that. Like, it's been years since that happened. But if you got a team that believes that they can, coming out of that locker room, everything's clear and it's not, oh, it's a Michigan and they're 7-0 at this point in time and it's the same situation. Iowa State is ranked and they're 0-0 just like we are. We can go out there and win that game. And I give Northern Iowa's coach credit to have his team ready to try and steal victory and make the shock of their lives for this potential season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And like I said, this one was way too close for comfort for an Iowa State team. Like we talked about, a top 10 team coming into the season, big expectations coming off of that big Fiesta Bowl win over Oregon last season. So this was a team with a lot of hype to do a lot of things. They've got quarterback Brock Purdy, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and he looked pretty pedestrian in this game. Hats off to Northern Iowa for making him somewhat uncomfortable in this one. Only 199 yards, no touchdowns. He just barely did enough for them to get the win. The Iowa State defense had two interceptions, which really sealed it for them. But yeah, this was way closer than the experts thought going into this one. I want to shift gears to a bigger, even more high-profile game. One of the biggest games of the weekend, number one Alabama, number 14 Miami. This game had a lot of hype going into it. It looked like a great matchup on paper, Ty, but 27-3 at halftime. This game was over after the coin toss. Alabama just continues to look like a freight train in college football. I know you watched this one, Ty. What were your thoughts on this?
Crazy part about this game is I'm looking at it as Manny Diaz getting out coached. There's no way that I look at Miami across the board and thinking that they can't compete. A lot of these players know each other, being that Florida is the neighbor to Alabama and Georgia, you know, so a lot of these guys are probably coming from the southern region of Florida and trying to find themselves and knowing that they hear so much about the U. But there's something that Coach Saban stressed, I think, in the first championship when Derrick Henry was there. Their defense was so solid, and he said, we're going to play and stress the line of scrimmage. And they've never changed that mantra or mentality. In the first quarter and the second quarter, Rhett Lashley is not coming up with anything. He's throwing screens to the perimeter and hoping that these receivers can pick up a block and hoping somebody misses. But Alabama's ready for that. So this is where they're going 3-0, 3-0, 3-0. And the score is going the other way. First off, I don't even know if I could really put a lot of it on Manny Diaz, but the way that the defense played, I have to put that on Manny Diaz because Manny Diaz is more of a defensive coach, defensive-minded coach, and defense didn't look prepared. They were missing tackles, not prepared. They're letting people cross their faces and getting 94-yard touchdowns. This is bad. Like, they were nowhere near prepared, and you knew about this matchup since April. Like these guys should be hype, and nowhere it looked like they just, once they seen those two scores go up, it's 10-0. It's like they gave up. And then Rhett Lashley is still up to the same antics of still trying to make De'Eriq King scramble. It can't be like that. If that's the draw up, then you, Rhett Lashley, and you, Manny Diaz, both need to go out of South Beach now because you're not ready for any big dog, let alone this is a situation where Nick Saban made it a point to blow you out and not take Bryce Young off the field. He kept him in there all game long to let you know that I'm not letting you breathe. I know who you are. I know what you guys are capable of. And I don't feel like Miami against these big dogs across the nation are going to show strong games. Like, everything that's going to be is going to be a tooth and nail fight if they win the game. Ever since Manny Diaz came to Coral Gables, I didn't like it. And Rhett Lashley just proved to me I don't buy his offensive coordinator skills and the previous games that he's lost. And he's been big matchups where he's been outcoached severely across the board.
I like it. That's a strong take, Ty. And I know you watch this program closely, and I think you're spot on with that take because you're right. When you give a team like Alabama, you give Nick Saban extra time to prepare. He tends to expose coaches. And this was a coaching mismatch. No, make no mistake about it, because you're right. There was guys running wide open all over the field. They clearly were not prepared for this game. Bryce Young, the former five-star recruit, man, he looked every bit the part with 344 yards, 4 touchdowns and no picks. You mentioned Derek King. This is a high-level quarterback, but Alabama made him look really pedestrian. He never really could get it going with only 178 yards, two interceptions that proved costly. But like I said, this game was over from the jump, and I know Miami has made a lot of progress, and they're starting to build that program back up. But this was a wake-up call for them to let them know that they are not in the same realm as an Alabama just yet. And quite frankly, they shouldn't hang their heads because nobody is. This team is an absolute juggernaut. They clearly look like the favorites again this year, a dominant performance by the Crimson Tide. I want to shift to the Big Ten. This was a fun matchup we saw on paper. I thought this game was going to be a lot closer tie, and it ended up being a blowout. Number 18, Iowa, taking on number 17, Indiana. Iowa blew them out 34-6. Watching this game, Iowa's defense is what really stood out to me. They were absolutely lights out in this game. They had three interceptions on Indiana's quarterback, Michael Penix Jr., who unfortunately, he just doesn't look like the same guy coming off of last year's ACL injury. It's really unfortunate. He's one of my favorite college quarterbacks to watch, and he just does not look like the same guy. Hopefully Indiana can bounce back. I thought that this was going to be a competitive ball game. I like what I've seen from this Indiana program the last couple seasons, the growth that they've shown, but Iowa just absolutely punched them in the mouth. This was never competitive. What were your thoughts on this Big Ten matchup?
They clearly were outmatched. Indiana, just like you said, what a difference 365 days can make. Indiana played some great football last year, including one of the best nail biters last year, where I still feel like they lost that game to Penn State because I don't think he crossed the pylon. But however, they ran that momentum and it carried them to have a high ranking this year in the top 25. And Iowa was prepared for this. And the one thing I have about Iowa is Iowa always gets out to these starts where they have a 9-0, 10-0 record, and they play a big dog in the Big Ten and lose. And knowing that this was an interesting matchup because you don't know what Indiana you're going to see, they showed you that Indiana does not belong in that realm of at least a top 25 unless they come out and play the rest of their games big-time football. We'll see how it pans out for them for the remainder of the season. There was pick six being thrown. They had so much speed on that field that Indiana could keep up with anybody, especially on the perimeter. They were doing a lot within this game to make it difficult for Indiana to even attempt to make this a comeback. For them to only have 6 points in a starter, it's a lot of question marks that I have for the Hoosiers at this point.
Yeah, you're certainly right. It was a lot of question marks. Like I said, I thought this would be a fairly competitive game. It was one of those games that I circled that I wanted to pay attention to because, like I said, I like what I've seen from Indiana. Indiana played Ohio State down to the wire last season, and it really looked like this team was starting to become one of the better Big Ten programs. But this was a big setback for them. This really showed that, like you said, maybe they're not quite ready for the big boys of this conference just yet. I want to shift to one of the biggest upsets of the weekend. Number 10, North Carolina losing to Virginia Tech. This was shocking. Heisman hopeful Sam Howell threw three interceptions, and he threw his Heisman out the window because this was a really bad loss to Virginia Tech and a devastating loss early in the season in ACC play. It really takes them out of the mix here early in the season.
This is a situation that North Carolina, I feel like I didn't even know that this was a situation. With him losing the two running backs in that backfield, he also lost four playmakers and make plays down the field, which is well over 2,000 yards that he's missing off this field. So it's all anew for what he has. And these guys going up against a Virginia Tech team where I feel like they could have played better. This is a North Carolina team that should have won this game. There's no way that they fall short in this situation with Sam Howell being a Heisman candidate or a hopeful, however you look at it. Just like you said, throw it out the window. They only scored 10 points up against a team where I feel Virginia Tech is the, I really don't want to call them inferior, but I feel like North Carolina did have the edge on them being ranked so high and going into this game. Now, this is a momentum switch where Virginia Tech gets to ride this as much as possible up against everybody, feeling like they could win a lot of these matchups. It's going to be uphill for Sam Howell. I feel bad for him with the start of the season. I think that he definitely can make a difference in the league because he'll have more playmakers around him. But this is not an interesting start. It's going to get tougher as they play within conference play and definitely the tougher games they have with, remaining within their schedule.
Yeah, I was totally shocked by this one. I totally bought into the UNC hype. I'm not going to lie. I was really high on this team coming into the year. I thought this was a team that could make a lot of noise. But with not a whole lot of ranked opponents out in front of them, I'm not sure how they make up ground to get back into the mix here. This is going to be a loss that's really going to sting. I think, like we said, I think it takes him out of Heisman contention early in the year. And just a really unfortunate loss for this program that looked like they belonged in this discussion. But certainly after this game, they don't. Another team that had a huge upset loss, a team that certainly doesn't belong in the top 25 discussion after their loss to Montana, number 20, Washington. This was the first FCS upset of a ranked FBS team since 2016. It was the worst loss in program history for the Washington Huskies, an embarrassing loss, an embarrassing performance by the offense in particular. Montana's a good FCS school, don't get me wrong, but this is an FCS school versus a top 25 AP team. They have no business losing this game. This was a terrible loss for the Washington Huskies.
This is where me and you always go at it when I talk about Pac-12 football. They've come up with some surprise wins, and I know we'll get into some of them, but right now, this is a clear-cut situation where Washington has always been one of those pinnacle teams that you think they'll find resolve and win their games and probably slip somewhere down the road, whether it's within conference play or play somebody out of conference that's tougher than them, that'll give them a tough fight, whether they bring it up to Washington or if they have to go out of the Northwest region to go play some football. But this right here is definitely a stunning situation. I did not think that Washington would be losing out of the gate, only amassing 7 points at the house. Montana did what they could to hold them down, for them to win this matchup 13-7. And knowing that Montana really doesn't have a superstar or star that just jumps out at you, they got beat. And listen to these numbers. 105 yards passing by Humphrey, 70 yards rushing, and their leading receiver had 29 yards receiving. This is what beat Washington in Washington. This is upsetting that this is how it went down. And let alone, it was 3-7 all the way until the fourth quarter. There was 10 points scored in the fourth, and Washington couldn't get back into the game. And this is a head-scratcher, especially with Morris throwing three picks at the end of the game, or within the game, excuse me.
Yeah, there's no excuses for this one. This was a terrible loss. They came out flat. They completely overlooked this team, and they got embarrassed. This was an embarrassing loss for them. This was an embarrassing loss for the Pac-12, certainly. Morris had an 8.4 QBR. I don't know if I've ever seen that in my life. A single-digit QBR, unreal. Really, really a bad showing for them in a shocking upset. Hats off to Montana, but yeah, that was ugly for the Huskies. But a huge, huge win for the Pac-12 that you kind of alluded to here was the UCLA Bruins beating the number 16 LSU Tigers 38-27. This was a physical performance, especially up front. Both lines of scrimmage for UCLA won this game. They held LSU to only 2 yards per carry, while UCLA's offense ran for 210 yards. There was nothing fluky about this game. UCLA was the better team on both sides of the ball, and they won this game outright. I was really impressed with what I saw from the Bruins on Saturday.
Going into Pac-12 football and going from Washington into a UCLA situation, there was no way, no how that I thought that LSU would lose this game. And the crazy part about it is a lot of people questioning Ed Orgeron in this upcoming season, saying if he doesn't perform like he did 2 seasons ago with the team with Burrow and company, that his job will be watched, or the hot seat will be around him. For him to lose to a UCLA team that has not been talented in some time, it has had mind-boggling situations all across the board, especially with them turning the ball over, watching them score the ball, and the offense can't even stop the defense, let alone their offense couldn't even get going to put up a huge amount of numbers. Like, they actually had to fight their way to try to get to 30 and couldn't. And UCLA took care of business in knocking them off. I tip my hat to UCLA because they have not been strong in football in some time. They've had good names go through that university, but not quality enough to have them in a big bowl of situation like this. They knocked off an LSU team who I definitely know that they're prepared, especially the way that their defense plays defense, and they scored the ball at an unbelievable clip out of the gate, and I give the Bruins a ton of credit by knocking off the Tigers.
Yeah, it was a dominating performance. The run game, like I said, both lines of scrimmage, they were the physically more imposing team, and that certainly is shocking when you're talking about an SEC program like the Tigers being completely outmanned, being completely outcoached. And you're right about UCLA. This is a program that's been down for a few years now, but this is the first season where head coach Chip Kelly has all of his guys. There's been a ton of turnover on the roster. He's finally in year 3 where he has all of his recruits and his guys, and he's really kind of putting his stamp on this program. And people forget, they look at what he did in the NFL, had limited success in the NFL, but prior to that, he was an outstanding coach at Oregon. I believe he only lost like 6 games in 4 years at Oregon. He was dominant, went to a national championship, Rose Bowl champion, multiple Pac-12 titles. So this is a guy who clearly can coach at this level. It took him a little bit of time to get this program going, but this was a huge statement win for the Bruins, a big time win for a team that most people had picked as the third or fourth best team in the Pac-12 South. Not just the Pac-12, but in their own division, most people didn't even have them winning it. And now they clearly look like they could be a Pac-12 favorite. Hats off to Chip Kelly and the Bruins. Huge win for them. Another big-time game I want to touch on here, Ty, was number 9 Notre Dame wins a thriller in overtime versus Florida State. I know there's no moral victories in sports, but after several down years for FSU, this game showed me that they are moving in the right direction, Ty. And Mike Norvell, the head coach, he could be the right guy to rebuild this program. They really put up a heck of a ball game. They played a heck of a ball game against a very good Notre Dame team and almost took care of business. You have to like what you saw if you're a Florida State fan, even in a loss.
The crazy part about this is that this was a tooth and nail battle that came down to the end of the game and being left to a kicker. One of my friends said they don't really like to watch football because it always comes down to a kicker. And you really watch the games that you've seen from whether it's pro or collegiate rank, and an extra point could get missed or a field goal could get missed, and so much stuff can happen off at the top of that. And for that to happen to Florida State in this game, in a game where they're trying to turn themselves around, they're trying to find themselves because Florida State has been suffering for the past 3 or 4 seasons, and I think they definitely took a dive ever since Jimbo left. So this is a bad game. Well, not a bad game, but this is a bad loss because I feel like they could have won that game being at home up against the Notre Dame team who has lost Ian Book. Ian Book is no longer there no more. And Ian Book is now in the league. So this is all a new situation for them to not only get beat, but they got beat by somebody that's fresh to your Florida speed and things of that nature, where the better athletes come out of the stronger states of Florida, Texas, and California. And they did what they needed to. So Notre Dame is definitely cruising right now. I think they get a breath of fresh air until they start to see some of the stronger teams within their schedule. But right now, that's a huge win out the gate up against a Florida State team who was really just trying to find their direction. Of course, they have the athletes to make these things happen. Of course, they're going to come up with some big wins in their schedule, but not to lose at home. They didn't protect the house at all.
Yeah, that's true, Ty. That's certainly true. And I think a win there would have gone a really long way for the rebuild process that Mike Norvell is doing there for the Seminoles. But I do think it was a really nice showing because this is a program that, quite frankly, hasn't even been that competitive in the last few years. The last time we saw this team really making some noise was Jameis Winston and Jimbo Fisher, who you alluded to. And that's been a while now. I want to say 2016 or so was really the last time we saw Florida State look like Florida State. They've had some really lean years. They've gone through some coaches. They've had some mishires. And I think they got it right with Norvell. And I think the arrow is pointed in the right direction, though. But what an awesome game. Game of the year so far. I know we're only 1 week in, but that was an absolutely awesome game to watch. But the biggest matchup, of course, of week one was number 5 Georgia, number 3 Clemson. These are two teams that could totally be in the college football playoff. They're that good, two elite programs. We know how good Clemson's been. Georgia has been on the cusp here, it seems like forever, but a very good team this year. And the Bulldogs came out with a huge win against Clemson. Bulldogs defense was absolutely incredible. I mean, unbelievable in this game, Ty, holding Clemson to only 2 yards rushing, and they recorded 7 sacks. I was completely blown away with what I saw from the Bulldogs. What did you make of this one?
You just said the game of the season so far is Florida State and Notre Dame. I think this is the game of the week or the season so far, being Clemson and Georgia, all the hype there. This is state lines between Georgia and South Carolina. It's all here, SEC, ACC going at it, and it's actually favored the SEC a lot this week. The SEC a lot this week. But this is the crazy part. You said Georgia's defense played stunning. Well, what about Clemson's defense? If it wasn't for a pick six on Georgia's side of the ball, the score would be 3-3. They'd be in overtime. don't lose the narrative that Clemson came to play ball too. That DJ lost the game off of a pick six. DJ did the best that he could up against a Georgia team who is a top 10, or they're actually number two in the nation at this point in time. And he made a critical mistake throwing that pick six, and that was the difference in the game. Nobody scored. And they lost not only the best quarterback in college football, Trevor Lawrence, they also lost one of the better running backs, or the best running back in college football last year, Travis Etienne. So they're all anew. And they did a quality job up against Georgia to make this a game, even though Georgia was missing pieces. But you have to think, that whole Clemson team pressed the reset button, had to start all over. As much as I'm up and down about Dabo, I got to give him credit for him to be ready for a Georgia team. And Kirby Smart trying to prove himself. But now after this win, there's a lot of question marks around the Georgia University with them missing players due to the nature of this pandemic that people are dealing with.
Yeah, I just read some reports about that too, and they could be in a dicey situation with COVID. It's going to be another one of those years where, you know, it's going to be an issue. COVID's going to be an ongoing issue, whether we like it or not. And the teams that can stay healthy, the teams that can keep their best players off that COVID list are certainly going to be at an advantage. But looking at this game, you know, Georgia's offense didn't do too much either. And you're right about that. The Clemson defense, this was an old-fashioned football game. This was a slugfest. These were two defenses that were absolutely dialed in. But Georgia didn't have to do much on offense because their defense was just that dominant. Extremely low-scoring game. This game was a battle for the 50-yard line. It was a lot of fun to watch, especially if you're a defensive enthusiast. But when I look at the results of this game, the one thing that really hits me is this puts Georgia in the driver's seat for the college football playoff. There's no doubt about it. It's a huge, huge non-conference win. Now, they've still got to navigate one of the toughest schedules. As we know, getting through the SEC is not going to be easy for them by any stretch. And, of course, you've always got Alabama looming. But Clemson, on the other hand, I think they've got to win out, Ty. At this point, having this early loss, they're going to have to win out the rest of their games if they want to get back in the playoff, because I don't think they're going to have a ranked opponent on their schedule as of now the rest of the way. So they're going to have to prove that this was going to be their only loss, because I don't think a two-loss Clemson team gets into the playoff.
And that's a tough scenario for Clemson to be in, especially that these guys have been NCAA playoff relevant. And if they're running a schedule where they're running into people questioning it, like how Alabama, and it's interesting that Alabama knocked off Miami as severely as they did. And they say, oh, well, Alabama will end up playing Citadel. Well, so will Clemson. So Clemson's schedule probably will look like that for the remainder of the season. So they're going to have to blow the doors off the hinges on a lot of these situations. So they're going to have to, you know, regroup and make their adjustments and get back out there on the gridiron and win these games. And they're going to have to be convincingly to make the committee be honest, because the committee does have favorites. And I could care less on how people may feel until they extend this to, I don't know, six or eight teams. You're going to continue to see the ones that they love the most up there getting the most votes. So Clemson has their work cut out for them. They're going to have to blow the doors up the hinges. And I think in Vegas, the over-under on games won this season is 11.5. Those questions still loom if Clemson can't get there.
Yeah, that's a great take, Ty, and I'm with you completely. Because style points count in college football. As we know, it's not just the wins and losses. They're going to have to be impressive. Like you said, not only are they going to have to win their games, they're going to have to look like a dominant top four team if they want to get into that playoff. So they're going to have to be impressive the rest of the way. And they certainly have the coaches and the players to do it. There's no doubt about that. But they're not going to have a whole lot of showcase games on that schedule to really show how great they are. So I don't know if blowing the doors off of North Carolina State and Virginia is going to do it. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the season plays out. But we are just getting started. Week one in the books with college football. Week one of the NFL is this weekend. Can you believe it, Ty? Week one, man. How jazzed are you for this?
I'm hyped because the season is here. But there's a down situation to what's going on right now. You know what the down situation is?
What's that, Ty?
Tom Brady's putting up another banner and he's getting another ring. And it's like, what else does he chase? And it's like people that keep saying, oh, well, this is it now. This is our turn. Oh, Aaron Rodgers got the pieces that he needs. Oh, he got Randall Cobb after he threatened to leave during the draft. If Brady gets 8 Super Bowls, then, like, what do we do now? Like he's the king of the NFL. Like, and I already feel like he's the GOAT of the NFL now. But it's like, what else is he chasing or being pushed around? And up against a quality team in the Dallas Cowboys, where every year – I don't even want to, like, talk about Cowboy fans, but everybody thinks that they'll make that change. Like, they have a quality team offensively and, well, now the defense has actually been picked up on the drafting side of the ball. If they can't come out the gate with a win at Tampa, to make a statement win. This is very intriguing, and both of them are basically in a questionable scenario on how they get this thing going. So I don't know how this goes, but I love the fact that Thursday we have our football here. Brady is going to, well, he is as of now 44 years old. I cannot believe this, and he's still the threat of the NFL. I remember, like, Steve DeBerg and all of the older guys that I'm trying to come up at the top of my head that played football. You have Warren Moon that played late. You had Brett Favre that played late. They are not playing as potent as Tom Brady is, and especially Brady's coming out with weapons again. They all came back, from Evans to Godwin to Brown to Gronk to now they have O.J. Howard, a 6'8 monster. Like, this is crazy, and a full season of Leonard Fournette. I want to see how this looks. The spread is 7.5. I don't know what's going to happen with Dallas. I feel like Dallas can make this an interesting game, but if they win the game, this is going to say a lot for the Dallas Cowboys, but I wouldn't put it past Brady on a banner night.
Oh, man, Ty. I love it. I absolutely love it, man. It just got hot up in the studio with the hot take here, talking about Brady, hanging another one. I love that you're taking your shot before week one. You heard it here first, PGF Nation. Ty has got the Bucks hanging another banner. And you know what, Ty? You might be right, because he has got Tom Brady, that is, he's got Father Time in a chokehold. I've never seen anything like it. It's unbelievable. 44 years old. He's still playing at such a high level. This guy threw what, like 40 something touchdowns last year, gets another ring. Unbelievable player. And you're right. He's got the weapons. He's got the band back together. Most of the time when we see a team make a Super Bowl run, generally you lose some guys because guys want to get paid. You got contracts that come up. Guys aren't wanting to look for their money. They got their ring, you know, and that just was not the case with the Buccaneers. Brady convinced these guys, come back, play with me, and we'll do it again. We'll run it back. And so it's going to be absolutely awesome to see what happens Thursday night. Cowboys, Bucks. We're going to make our picks on some betting picks. Spoiler alert, that could be one of mine for you guys here at the end of the show. But I want to make some more bold predictions here, Ty. Who do you got? Because we're going to go through the divisions. We're going to take one division at a time here. We're going to make our picks for who's going to win each one of these divisions. Let's start with Brady's old division. How about the AFC East? Who do you got winning that division, Ty?
It's interesting that I seen something earlier today that says the Patriots are number one. They're one of the top five teams to threat to make a Super Bowl run. And I'm not buying that, especially with the person that made that statement. I'm still giving it to Buffalo. I'm going to say this here and now, and I'm going to admit this is a take. Josh Allen can end up being one of the more dangerous quarterbacks that we have ever seen in football history. I'm saying that right now. And I'm not a Buffalo Bills fan at all, but just watching him, as long as you could get him to get playmakers, and I want to set up the scenario. As long as you could get him playmakers to at least send four off the line. So let's just say three receivers and a tight end go out for a play, and the front line's in front of him. So then that's 4 and 5, right? So you got a running back and him, right? So say the running back plays the flat. There is so much space and opportunity for him not only to pick you apart with the cannon that he has, but he's a willing runner and he's huge. Like, you have to try to bring him down. He's 6'6", and he can run. So just watching all the plays that he made last year, it only can get better for the defenses that he's going to see. As long as they keep them honest and spread, I feel like the Buffalo Bills could be dynamic once again. They cannot walk away from the wheel. Don't reinvent the wheel. Please keep going with what you got going on. As long as he has Beasley, he has Diggs, he has so many different weapons, Knox. I'm just trying to name a few off the top of my head. I think the Bills definitely win the AFC East. If the Patriots come out and stun them, I'll tip my hat and give them credit. But I don't think Mac Jones comes straight out of Alabama and runs the East right now. So I'll give the Bills first. I think the Patriots may make it interesting. I don't think that they'll have 9 wins to make it above 500 season, but it'll be interesting if they can.
Man, I love it, Ty. You are lighting it up today. So we've got Brady with his 8th ring, and Josh Allen's got a gold jacket. I love it. I love these takes, man. You're coming out swinging. Nothing wrong with that. The Bills are the favorite in this division, and they should be. Quite frankly, they should be. But I'm going to go out on a limb here, Ty, and I'm going to say the evil empire strikes back. I think the Patriots shock the world and win this division. I've got them going 11-6, and I've also got the Bills going 11-6, but I think the Patriots get the tiebreaker, and it's going to force the Bills to be a wild card team. Both teams are great. It would not surprise me at all. I'm totally with you on Josh Allen. This kid reminds me a lot of a young Ben Roethlisberger back when Ben was scrambling and breaking outside of the pocket, throwing the deep ball. He reminds me a lot of that type of player. Just a totally awesome athlete, a big-time talent, and they've really got it going there in Buffalo. But the Patriots have so many guys coming back this year, and I am going to jump on something that you talked about on this podcast. You were ahead of the curve on this. You really pumped up Mac Jones. I was not a believer, but I'm starting to believe. I think we've seen something here in this preseason. Mac Jones has something. He's got that leadership quality, that quiet confidence. He throws a nice ball. I think he's going to work well in this system. And with so many guys, like I said, coming back to New England, I think that they're going to get the AFC East and shock everyone. So that's going to be my pick. But I've got the Bills right there in the hunt, no doubt about it. Wouldn't surprise me if they took it. Let's shift to the AFC West here, Ty. We know the heavy favorite is Kansas City. Are they taking this division again?
Yes, somebody has to prove to me that they can stop that track meet. I've never seen another sport be played inside a sport. And, football's been turned into a track 4x1 or 4x4, however you want to look at it. That's what's happening when they wear red and yellow jerseys from Missouri. It's a track meet. If you have Mecole Hardman and Tyreek going out for plays, you really have to watch defenses shift to slow them down, and Mahomes can make every throw across the board. Not to say that they can't lose games or probably have a surprising season where they lose more than we expect, but until we see that they are the team to beat, and in the words of the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, to be the man, y'all going to have to beat the man. And I don't think that any of them in the AFC West can do it. I feel like the Chargers can have an interesting season. The Raiders are riding on high. And I just want to see what Bridgewater could do with this offense. I'm as you know, I'm an ACC guy. But the crazy thing about Teddy Bridgewater is his career. He's been given opportunities. He's actually been successful, and teams just don't think that he can cut it. So can he actually make Denver his home and do something successful within this season? I'm pushing for him. As much as I'm not a Broncos fan or anything, it's enough. He did well in New Orleans. They got rid of him. He did well in North Carolina. They got rid of him. He did well in Minnesota and caught the concussion on that dirty hit. They got rid of him. I mean, it's so many different situations for Teddy Bridgewater that he's overcome situations and they just don't give it to him. And that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day. And I'll talk about that, Teddy. Just keep your head up.
Hey, I like it, Ty. I'm with you. You got to beat the champs before you can become the champs. This is the AFC champions. This is the team that's played in, I don't even know what, 3 Super Bowls in a row now. They're the dominant team in the AFC. I think they continue that stretch going into the season as well. Patrick Mahomes, the Arsenal, Kelsey, they're loaded. I mean, this team is loaded. Andy Reid, one of the great coaches this league has ever seen, one of the great play designers this league has ever seen. He's going to have them back there on top of this division. But I'm with you. Watch out for the Chargers. I think the Chargers are on the rise. I really like what they're doing. I thought they had one of the best off seasons in the NFL with some of the free agent moves they made, with some of the draft picks they made. I think they really shored up some spots that were holes on last year's team. And with a new coaching staff and a new dynamic, I think that this could be a big year for them. But I'm with you on the Broncos. I think the Broncos are a team that could win 9 or 10 games. Teddy Two Gloves does not get the love he deserves. You're right, because he might not be a superstar. He might not be a guy that's going to win you the game, but he's not going to lose you the game. He's a guy that's he's a great manager. He's a great distributor of the football. He's a point guard out there. And I think he's going to be a steadying presence for this Broncos team with a lot of weapons. People forget this Broncos team has a lot of weapons on the outside. They've got some really good young receivers. So Bridgewater is going to have an opportunity to really showcase himself this year. And I think Denver is going to be a tough out. So I like your take there as well. Let's keep it going here in the AFC. AFC North. Browns appear to be the favorite, but this division is loaded, man. Maybe the best division in the NFL. You could certainly make a case for it. Who do you got winning the AFC North, Ty?
I'm going with Baltimore. I think you're going to have to re-look at the situation in Vegas. The odds are going to Baltimore. Baltimore is still the favorite in Las Vegas. Cleveland is in second place as of right now. You're going to have to do your research on that. Only if they can make a difference in trying to bring another playmaker there for him. And just looking at who they brought in, this is not fair for Baltimore if this does go down. And I'm hoping that the management can make a difference for them. They just worked out Le'Veon Bell and Devontae Freeman. Just picture if they end up signing both alongside Gus Edwards. If they can get the three of these amigos to go crazy alongside with Lamar Jackson, this could be outstanding work, the way that they could run the ball, knowing that Le'Veon Bell is patient. If he could set that RPO up and play that patient role, and a lot of the defenders bite while Lamar is streaking the other way, or they can do some misdirection to make these defenses guess, I'm not giving the leg up to Cleveland at this point. If I want to see what Odell does look like outside of the injury lingering season. Like, this is happening to him again. He's going to have to prove himself. All of the makeup behind Baker Mayfield, can it be more of a passing system than the run game? That run game has actually been more of the mention than him, but he did enough to manage them to get to a successful season as of last year. But right now, I'm going with Baltimore until somebody can slow down that run game. And if they could bring any other pass catcher or playmaker downfield to put alongside Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews, that'll definitely sell me on Baltimore even further. But right now, that's Baltimore's division. I still feel like Pittsburgh is around. They'll win their shock value games. They probably will steal a game from Baltimore because that's one of the better, if not best, rivalry in the NFL. Cincinnati, we have to see a full season of Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is an awesome quarterback coming out of college, but he suffered a significant injury, and it's sad that he's coming into a system that we don't really know too much about because he only played a handful of games. So I think Cincinnati will continue to bring up the rear. I think it's a three-headed monster because I can never count Pittsburgh out. Mike Tomlin and Big Ben, they still have that winning caliber. Again, like I said, Baltimore with Lamar Jackson, probably the one of the more creative, explosive, dynamic quarterbacks I've ever seen. If they could just get him another receiver or two, along with the two potential running backs that they can end up picking up, if they can get both Devontae Freeman and Le'Veon Bell, this could be crazy for the Baltimore Ravens. I'm going with the Ravens, the defense in that run game all day long.
Yeah, Ty. So a couple weeks ago, I would have said Baltimore, but I think the J.K. Dobbins injury is big. I was sky high on J.K. Dobbins. This is a guy I absolutely loved when I evaluated his tape coming out of Ohio State, a running back that I think was going to be a big-time player for them. He flashed last season, was starting to come into his own, and nothing against Le'Veon Bell and Devontae Freeman, but these are two guys that are past their prime. I think they can make an impact if they bring him in, certainly, but I don't expect them to be able to make up the loss for J.K. Dobbins for a team that is so dependent on the running game. If this was a different position, I wouldn't be as alarmed by it, but I think this was a huge loss going into the year for the Ravens. And for me, it just barely shifts my pick to Cleveland. I've got Cleveland winning the division at 11-6, but I think Baltimore is going to actually tie them at 11-6, and it's going to come down to a tiebreaker. I'll give a slight edge to Cleveland. One thing that I like that you said, though, was Pittsburgh. I do think the national media especially is throwing dirt on these guys. I keep hearing more and more people saying, you know, this team is done, the run is over, and this and that, because of the way they finished last season. And rightfully so. They finished the season poor for sure. But I'm with you. Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season ever as a head coach. And Ben is coming back. He looks healthy. He looks like he can make some noise this year. They still have Chase Claypool, Juju Smith-Schuster, Deontay Johnson. They're loaded at receiver. Now you bring in arguably the best running back in this class in Najee Harris to help supplement that running game and get it back to where it needs to be. There's a lot of question marks on the offensive line. I get that. But they also bring in Pat Freiermuth, a big-time tight end out of Penn State. The defense, we know, is going to be one of the best in football. They've been one of the best for the last several years. They've led the league in sacks four straight seasons. So the defense is good. If the offense can get things figured out, new offensive coordinator, I think Pittsburgh is a team that people are burying a little too quickly. I think this is a team that maybe doesn't win the division, but it would not surprise me if they won 9 or 10 games and find themselves in the wild card mix. This is a very deep division for sure. Cincinnati's got a good young quarterback, but they still have way too many holes on that roster to be competitive in this black and blue division. But I'm going to go Cleveland in the AFC North. Very close race. I think it comes down to the wire like it almost always does. But let's shift to the AFC South. Let's wrap up the AFC here. Ty, who do you got in the AFC South?
I'm going with the king himself in Julio. I'm going with the Tennessee Titans. That offense could probably be one of the top five offenses in this league if Ryan Tannehill can do this correctly. If Ryan Tannehill doesn't do this correctly, then all the questions come back out on if he's the real quarterback that everybody's saying that we seen last year, and the money that they gave him over not giving Derrick Henry the money, where I really feel like everything is around number 22. And I guess they don't want to give him the credit, but for him to have a 2,000-yard season speaks volumes in comparison to the quarterback of Ryan Tannehill. So I'm going with Tennessee Titans. Mike Vrabel, probably being one of the only successful coaches out of the stable from the Evil Empire up here in Massachusetts. I feel like the Colts have some work to do, especially with Carson Wentz. We don't know what we're dealing with his injury situation, also with him fighting and dealing with the COVID situation. Jacksonville Jaguars is a wait and see. Definitely if Trevor could make the jump from college to here. But I love his style of play. I love that he's a great quarterback. That's where I really draw the line at. The Houston Texans are really in a troublesome situation. They're starting Tyrod Taylor to start the season out. I really wonder what they're going to do with Deshaun Watson. Get rid of him now. Don't do this to a guy that has potential and talent to just leave him on the bench because you don't want to watch him go. Like you guys have built this fire so high to watch D-Hop go, to watch J.J. Watt go, and now you want to hang on to Deshaun Watson for what? What type of leverage are you hanging on to him? You're going to watch his career burn? So the Texans are in a forest fire right now, and I think it's between those three teams. I think Jacksonville will probably come in second to last, and it's between the Colts and the Titans. I feel the Titans have the edge, though.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ty. I think it comes down to the Colts and Titans as well. I think the Titans have a slight edge. The Colts, the question marks with Wentz, I think, are real. He's one of those guys a lot of people think could be a comeback player of the year type of candidate. Maybe he will be reuniting with his old head coach, or his old offensive coordinator, I should say, there in Indy. They've still got a really good roster, though. The Colts are going to be a tough out. They've got a very good team. They've got a good defense, a great O-line. They've got some weapons. So this is a team that I think could certainly make it interesting in the AFC South. But I'm going to go with the Titans as well. And I like what you said about Mike Vrabel. This is a really good head coach, a guy that maybe is a little underrated as a head coach. He's done a really nice job there. They've been competitive these last couple of years. And like you said, with the running game, the combination of bringing in a guy like Julio to play alongside A.J. Brown, this is going to be a better passing attack you would expect this year. So I think they've got a little more firepower on offense. The defense still has some pretty big question marks, especially in the secondary. I think they're going to be in some shootouts this year. But I do think this is a team that on paper should be winning the AFC South. Let's shift to the NFC. Let's start in the NFC East. Who do you got in the NFC East? Who do you think comes out of this division?
If the Dallas Cowboys don't get this figured out right now, scrap everything. Get rid of everybody. The linemen, Zeke, Dak, everybody must go. Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, everybody must go. Michael Gallup, Van Der Esch, everybody must go. Like, there is no way that they could continue to have this much talent across the board and continue to be, at best, a 10-win, 11-win team. Like, I feel like they should be able to do more with what they have. Unfortunately, they have been running to the injury bug, and that's been hurting them. And also the defense is what's been really letting them down because people have been able to score on them at a clip that it's hard for them to come back into these games. I'm going with the Dallas Cowboys until further notice, but I will have them on edge if they lose the division. Get rid of everybody. What do you hang on to? And you just threw Dak a whole bunch of money to really soak up all of your beliefs into number four. So I'm going with Dallas.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. This has to be their division. If they do not win this division, and forget just winning the division, they've got to win this division and they've got to make some noise in the playoffs. I think it's that desperate for them right now because you're right. On paper, there's way too much talent. I think if they don't win this division, Mike McCarthy's seat is going to go from hot to scorching. Because this guy is clearly needs to get it done. Now, last season, you got to give him a little bit of a pass. They had so many injuries. As we know, Dak Prescott, they had injuries all over the offensive line. Too many guys out for them to really make some real noise. So I'm going to give him a pass last year. But this is the year. You look around this division, there's still a lot of teams that are rebuilding here. They have the clear-cut roster edge. There's no reason at all that they should not be the heavy favorite in the NFC East. I think they've got to win at least 11, 12 games and really establish themselves as a big-time playoff team. I will say I like what the Giants are doing. This is a team that a lot of people are not believing in, but they won 5 of their last 8 games to finish the year. Daniel Jones cut back on the turnovers. The defense really started to light it up and was a top 10 defense in the NFL last year. They quietly had some big wins, including a road win against Seattle in that stretch. I like what I saw from them in the second half of the season. I think the Giants are a team that could maybe be a wild card team. I don't think they win this division. I think Dallas still is the favorite here, but I do think that Big Blue might be better than most people realize. Washington still has huge question marks at quarterback, but I love what they've done on the defense. And the Eagles, well, the Eagles might just be playing for the number one overall pick. I just don't believe in this team at all. I don't like what they've done. That Super Bowl season feels like a lifetime ago. I don't believe in Jalen Hurts. I think that they are a dumpster fire. It would not surprise me at all if they have a top two, top three type of pick. Don't believe in them in this division. I think it's the Cowboys, but I think the Washington football team and I think the Giants could be competitive, but I still think the Cowboys are the heavy favorite. Let's move out west here, Ty. NFC West, who do you got winning this one? This is another very competitive division, maybe one of the best divisions in the entire NFL.
If injuries didn't play teams' progression, I would say the Los Angeles Rams. But right now, depending on how they move forward, the Arizona Cardinals should win this division. I'm going to shock the world with this one. D-Hop, hopefully he can inspire A.J. Green to come out and play some good football. They have J.J. Watt in a new scene, new situation. Kyler Murray is a mobile quarterback that can make the throws. He has to make this happen right now while these guys are in their primes to make this thing happen. The Cardinals have to take advantage of this situation. What happened with the Rams, especially with them losing not only one running back, but the second one is down too. Like, this is interesting on how the Rams could actually push with no running game again. And Matthew Stafford back in a saddle with a running game that he's going to have to work his play action and things like that to make the defense buy what he's given. So, again, Aaron Donald, one of my favorites, if not my favorite defensive player in the league. And Jalen Ramsey being one of the better cover corners in the league also. But that defense can't continue to carry them every single season without that offense turning this thing up. And there's no more secrets on Cooper Kupp or Robert Woods. These guys are official. These defenses will not sleep on these guys any longer. I'm going with the Cardinals to shock everybody. As much as I want to give Russ some credit, it's still hit or miss with DK. Tyler Lockett is still a speed demon on the outside. I'm not really buying their run game every game. And I seen them live, and I really didn't see too much in the preseason game because it's a run-through. But I'm not impressed with what the Seahawks bring to the table other than Russell Wilson, DK, and Tyler Lockett. So I think this may be a struggle season for the Seahawks, to be brutally honest. So I'm going to go with the Cardinals to steal this division.
The Cardinals, that's a hot take, no doubt about it. Most people have them pegged last or third in this division. I haven't seen anybody take the Cardinals. I love that you're going out on a limb on this one, but it is a competitive division. I like some of the moves they made. I thought they had a nice draft. And so this is a team that wouldn't surprise me if they made some noise. They had a really good start to the season last year. They faded down the stretch. Maybe if they can put it together this year, I think the running game will be big for them. I think the Cardinals need to establish the running game and be more consistent in that department in order to take some of that pressure off Kyler Murray so he doesn't have to carry so much of the load. I think that'll go a long way. And if this defense, if this Cardinals defense can take a step forward this year, they're certainly a team that can make some noise. I'm not willing to pick them for the NFC West just yet, but I do like the direction they're headed overall. For me, it comes down to the Rams or the 49ers. I think those are the two favorites for me. I went back and forth on this one, and it's really tough. I really want to pick the Rams. I love what their defense did last year. They looked really good, one of the best units in the league. We know Sean McVay is one of the best coaches in the league, a great play caller, a great offensive mind. You talked about the wide receivers. They've got playmakers. The big question mark is Matthew Stafford coming over at quarterback. On paper, it looks good. It looks like, okay, you're getting an upgraded quarterback. They should be better. But I still got to see it to believe it. And I don't know for sure if I buy into it just yet. Now, maybe the Rams shock me and they rattle off a 13-14 win season. I don't know. Maybe they will. But I still got to see it. I still got to see it fit. I still got to see it work. Last I checked, I don't even remember the last time Matt Stafford threw an important pass. So let's see what happens when he's in a big-time game on a winning team, if he can make the throws. Question marks there for me, even though he's a talented guy. I'm going to go with the 49ers. I think this is still one of the best rosters in the NFL, one of the best play callers in the NFL. I'm not willing to throw dirt on Jimmy Garoppolo just yet. Most people have already given up on him. Heck, their own team looks like they're ready to give up on him by taking Trey Lance, but I don't think they're going to throw the keys to Lance just yet. I think Lance is the future, but I think this is Jimmy G's team this season, and I think we're going to see Lance sprinkled into the offense with some of the option stuff, some of the zone read stuff, and some trickery type plays. I think they're going to use him in some really creative ways to actually bolster this offense. This was a team that got bit by the injury bug really bad. Coming off of that Super Bowl loss, that close loss to the Chiefs, the following season, they got so many injuries. They lost so many key players. They're coming back. It looks like they're pretty healthy going into this year. If Jimmy Garoppolo can stay healthy, and that's a big question mark because he's only played one healthy season in his career so far, and that was the year they went to the Super Bowl. If he can stay healthy and consistent and they can run the ball like they always do, the defense still has so many playmakers. I've got the Niners winning a very tough division. I think it'll come down to the wire. Let's shift to the NFC North here, Ty. Who do you got in the NFC North? This one kind of feels like a landslide in most people's books, but you've been going out on a limb with some of these picks, so I'm curious to hear who you got here.
I'm going to go with Green Bay. And I'm going to say this here and now. Aaron Rodgers does not win the division. If Aaron Rodgers does not win the NFC Championship, there are going to be a lot of questions at this end of the season, and I will be right back here to let you know how I feel about the situation because he's awesome. He's one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen, and he keeps falling short. I will put him in the same class as Dan Marino. Even though he has a championship, this is not enough for him to be considered three-time MVP, all of the accolades around him, him being a bad man and all this other stuff. I don't want to hear it any longer. You stopped the presses the day of the NFL draft to get Randall Cobb. That's it. That's all that changed. You were happy with getting Randall Cobb, but I think because he's your favorite target, I'm guessing. Him and Jordy Nelson, the only one that still has it left in him is Randall Cobb. You have to show the world that you still have it, that you could win this conference, period. It's not the North because you guys are still the stronghold with the offense that you do have with now Cobb as alongside with Adams and Tanyan being a monster tight end as well. There's no more excuses. I'm tired of him dodging every bullet. I'm tired of him saying, oh, I'm going to retire, and tired of him talking about, oh, I'm going to go on Jeopardy. No, get it done. Nobody needs to hear this any longer because it's too long of a gap since you won your last Super Bowl. Which was it, what, 11, 10 years ago? Like, that's a long time ago, bro. That's a long time ago. Enough is enough. Get it sold. Get it done. There's no more excuses. I'm going with Green Bay to win the division. If they don't, I'll be right back here talking my stuff.
Oh, you're definitely going to be right back here talking your stuff. Either way, I love it, Ty, because it's the right take. It just is. This is the right take. This is the Packers division, a lot like we talked about with the Cowboys. I actually think the North is even more lopsided as far as them being the favorites here. They're the heavy favorites, and they should be. You look at the Vikings, I still don't believe in Kirk Cousins. I've been calling him Captain Average for I don't know how many years now. He's good, not great, and good, not great doesn't get you anywhere. All it gets you is a 500 record and maybe a wild card team at best. That's about what the Vikings are. I don't think they're a contender like the Packers are. The Bears, they've got their young quarterback now with Justin Fields. There's a lot of excitement around them, but they're still a couple years away, and he's still going to have to develop. So I don't see them as being a contender just yet. I like their defense. I like some of their pieces, but they're still not as good as where the Packers are. And the Lions are in a rebuild with a new quarterback and a lot of new pieces, a new head coach. So we know they're not ready yet. I do like some of the moves they made in the offseason. I do like the head coach as far as on paper. I like his philosophy. I liked some of the draft picks they made, but they've still got a lot of holes to fill, so they're not ready. This is the Packers division. There's no reason that they shouldn't run through this division and be a 13 or 14 win team and be right there in the mix in the playoffs again. No more excuses for Aaron Rodgers. I'm with you. As great as he is, he has simply not gotten it done enough in the playoffs. He's got his ring, and that's great, but he hasn't done it enough. Too many big-time exits in the playoffs for people to be putting him in that top five, top six type of discussion. So he's going to have to make some noise here if he wants to get his name up there with the truly all-time greats. I'm totally with you, Ty. Let's move to the last division here, the NFC South. We know the reigning champs reside in this division, but there's some other teams that are going to make it interesting. Who do you got in the NFC South?
Stop it. Right now, stop it. I started the show saying one person's name, and you're going to challenge him. He's almost like Candyman or Annabelle or The Conjuring. I don't know what you need to see. Leave that man alone. If they're going to make it interesting, they have to go up against Thanos, and Thanos has all six stones. He has O.J. Howard. He has Gronkowski. He has Antonio Brown. He has Chris Godwin. He has Mike Evans. He has Leonard Fournette. Those are six stones right now that they get to go to war with. And all he has to do is snap his fingers, and this could hurt. Like, and like I said previously, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And he's playing. Brady's only playing for championships now. There's nothing else you could tell me that he's playing for. I think it's one or two other records that are out there that Brady doesn't have. All the statistical categories that are out there that are good For a quarterback, Brady's on top of the pile all across the board. I think Peyton Manning has one more record left. I think Drew Brees has the overall most passing yards. I think he has them by maybe 1,000 or 2,000. I think it's 2,000, but he should be able to take care of that by, to me, probably week 9, week 10, just to be fair, not to put him in a – I feel like he could get it done in week 4 or 5. I really feel like that can happen, but just to be fair, I feel like Brady going to sit across the board. You know, God willing, barring any injury, because I don't want to wish for that either, but he should be all right.
Yeah, no, you're right, Ty. I knew you were going with the Bucs. I'm going with the Bucs as well. The greatest of all time. It's funny you brought up the Candyman thing. I literally just went and watched that movie last night, the new one that just came out. And you're right. It's like staring in the mirror saying, Brady man, because this guy will come and hunt you down. He is so good. He is an absolute killer. The only thing he's chasing at this point, forget the GOAT conversation. I don't even want to hear people arguing GOAT anymore. That discussion is over. He buried it. He put it out like a cigarette butt. Over and done with. The only thing he's chasing is Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Muhammad Ali, Babe Ruth. He's entering that discussion now. Now we're going to put him in the discussion. Is he the greatest athlete of all time? That's how great this guy is. Because if he gets another ring, man, forget about it. We might just have to push all those other legends aside and put Brady on his own mountain, because this guy is just unbelievable. I cannot believe what he did last year. I can't believe how good he's looked in these last few years. He's got the weapons, like you said. He's got the roster. He's got the team. And now it's a team that knows how to get to the mountaintop and knows how to win. It's scary. I would not be surprised if they're right in the mix again. I like your bold take of putting up another banner for them. Tampa Bay wins the South. I'm with you. I think the Saints are going to be competitive. I think they're going to be better than most people realize. I think Winston's going to have a good year. I really do. I think he's going to fit into this offense. I don't think he's going to take as many chances in this offense. I think it's going to be a lot safer throws, a lot more underneath stuff, a lot more checkdowns. He's not going to be putting up those big interception numbers like we saw in Tampa Bay. So I think the Saints are going to be good. I think they'll be competitive. I think they could certainly be a playoff team, but I don't think they rival the Bucs. I think the Falcons still have too many holes. I got Kyle Pitts as my rookie of the year. I think he's going to have a monster year, but they've got too many holes. The Panthers, I think they have a decent year, but once again, they've got too many holes. There's too many question marks. Sam Darnold, I still think he has a chance to redeem himself down there in Carolina, but they're not ready to compete with the big boys yet. So yeah, give me the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This has been awesome, man. We just went through, previewed it for you guys. PGF Nation, we told you all of our picks. So when all these picks go up in flames, you can blast me on Twitter. You can hit me up at PGF Podcast. Tell me how bad these picks were. I love hearing from you guys. And we're going to wrap it up like we always do with the
Pick Six.
Myself and Ty, we're each going to have 3 betting picks that we like this upcoming weekend. I'm going to throw it to Ty first. Who's going to be your first pick here in the Pick Six?
I'll go with the Rams money line at home. I think they should take care of the Bears Sunday night. Introducing Matthew Stafford to that arena at SoFi out there in California. I think the Bears are making a mistake going with Dalton out of the gate. If you can make a difference and try to go after that, that is a winnable game for the Rams. I feel like that defense is stout enough to slow down that Bears offense until they get Fields in there.
I like that one. I like that one a lot, Ty. My first one is going to be in the NFL. I'm going to take the Minnesota Vikings, and I'm going to lay the 3 points here. I think this is a matchup where I just talked about Minnesota. They're good. They're not great. But when I look at this Minnesota Vikings team, I like this matchup, only having to lay the 3 points against the Bengals. This is a Bengals team that still has a lot of holes. I know they got Joe Burrow back, but they did nothing to improve that offensive line. I think the Vikings defense is going to be able to put pressure on him. I think Kirk Cousins and company will have just enough to be able to run the ball against Cincinnati, control this game, and put up just enough points to take care of business. I've got Minnesota, and I'm going to lay the 3. Who's going to be your second pick, Ty, here in the Pick Six?
Ohio State covers against the Oregon Ducks in Columbus, Ohio.
What's the line on that one, Ty?
14.5.
All right, so you're taking Ohio State. You're going to lay the 14.5. The hook is always a little dangerous, but I think I'm with you on this one, Ty. Oregon did not look very impressive in week 1. They had to come back in the fourth quarter to beat Fresno State. Now, Fresno State is a much better team than most people realize, But if you're going to call yourself a top 10, top 11 type of team, there is no reason that that should be a close game in the fourth quarter. Oregon looked really flat in that game. I didn't like what I saw from them. I thought Ohio State didn't look awesome against Minnesota, but Minnesota is probably still a better opponent than Fresno State, and it was on the road. I think overall this is a game where, yeah, Ohio State, it looks like they should be a heavy favorite in this one. Wouldn't surprise me if they take care of business and win by a couple touchdowns. I'm going to move to the college ranks as well, and I'm going to take UNLV, Arizona State, and I'm going to take the under 55. These are two teams that I don't think are going to be able to move the ball a whole lot. I don't see this being a shootout. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, bit of a grinder, and I think we could see some low-scoring in this one. Arizona State's defense looks pretty good. I don't think UNLV is going to be able to put up a ton of points against them. I think it has the makings for a low-scoring game, so I'm going to take the under 55 Arizona State and UNLV. So what's going to be your last pick here in the pick six, Ty?
I am going to go to your side of the earth right now and go with the Pac-12. Night gamer, USC crushes Stanford. I think Stanford is in big trouble, uphill battle, going up against the Brother Trojans at home with a 7:30 start out west, which is a 10:30 start for us out in the east. It gives us something to watch late. So I'm going with the Brother Trojans giving 17 to Stanford in Los Angeles.
I like that pick too, Ty. Man, I'm really on board with your picks here. I love that pick. USC looked really good. I know it was San Jose State, but San Jose State was actually a pretty good team. This was a team with a lot of veteran guys, a lot of returning starters. There were a lot of people, a lot of analysts that thought that that could be a close game, and USC absolutely steamrolled them. They looked really impressive. They looked really sharp. I like what I saw from them. And Stanford, on the other hand, looked really bad against Kansas State. They were not impressive at all. I thought that Stanford would at least be able to keep that game close. They didn't. It was not even competitive at all against a very average Kansas State team. USC has a huge advantage as far as the athletes here. This is a big time mismatch. I'm with you. I like USC. I feel comfortable laying the 17. I think this is a 3-touchdown win, maybe 4 touchdowns. I think this thing could get ugly. So I'm with you. USC at home, I think they roll Stanford. That's a great pick by you. I'm going to take the last pick here for me. I'm going to stick in the Pac-12 as well, a non-conference Pac-12 game here. Utah versus rival BYU. Utah's on the road, lane 7. Once again, though, this is a team that looked really sharp early in the season so far. I just think that this is a mismatch. I think Utah is a much better team than people realize. They're a physical, smash-mouth team. I think they've got the coaching edge. I think they've got the athletes. They've had some big-time transfers come into this program recently. I think they take care of business, and they win this game by 2 touchdowns. So I feel comfortable laying the 7, and that is going to do it for the pick 6. Hopefully you guys can win some money playing some of these picks. We'll be doing this each week as our regular season coverage rolls into week 2 coming up. Lots of fun games. Should be a blast. I know it's been a blast for me, myself, and my co-host Tyrone Powell. Once again, regular season is here, guys. PGF Nation, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any of the action, because we're going to be breaking down all the games going ahead, making our picks, and making predictions as well. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.